Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. It's Jane Hoffman with a special edition of Blog Talk Radio, Political Gravity. I want to address communication on social media today and also some other conflicts that have been arising, some internal. It's Good Friday, and everybody is looking for answers in their life, whether it's from prior conflicts or ongoing things that ail them. I want to primarily focus on a situation I had on the Facebook page, I Support Dylan Farrell. I was invited to that page. It could have been an advertisement, I'm not sure, but I wasn't invited to that page, and I made the presumption that I should, I made a suggestion that I should, Dylan Farrell, forgive her father after years of turmoil of possible sexual abuse, and I realized it was not the proper format to make that proposition because that was a page strictly for people who had been victims of sexual assault and could identify with Dylan Farrell and supported her cause. Now, I want to read from a paper that I wrote in 2008 for a professor at Cal State Northridge. It's about Woody Allen. In both screenplays, I was writing about the movie Adaptation, which was written by Charlie Kaufman, and Deconstructing Harry by Woody Allen, which is a comedy. The Woody Allen one is a comedy. It focuses on bad decisions Woody Allen had made throughout his marriages. He had been married to Kirstie Alley. They'd shared a child. He had an affair in one of his marriages with his wife's sister, and he couldn't find anyone to go accept an award for him at at an event at his college. So he was looking up old girlfriends, talking to ex-wives. He wanted to bring his son Hillard, but the wife said no. Deconstructing Harry is more defined as Woody Allen's writing experience. It has detoured from a format while still defining the characters. Harry Block is the main character, by the way. Besides Harry Block's own self-destructiveness, his antagonist could be the result of his poor choices or the sister of the wife he had an affair with. He is both his own enemy and archetype hero to himself, but in a nemesis way knows that his own behaviors must be dealt with. He claims to his therapist two-thirds through the movie that he has failed to grow up, and it doesn't matter which woman he is with, he is experiencing the same problems he had 20 years ago. So let me skip over to the next part. So then I do a lot about, okay. In Deconstructing Harry, Harry is well aware of his poor choices. His most deep-seated disappointment is probably the way he treated his wife and the negative consequences that follow regarding visitation rights. Sometimes his characters are blurred. I wasn't sure if the Demi Moore character, which played a therapist, was an exaggeration of his imagination or a true depiction of his wife's breakup. He even falls for a fan in an elevator while he is supposed to go meet his lover, who is his ex-wife's sister. He has a tendency to botch things up and complicate situations more. His vices are often his strong points. By aligning and even confiding in a hooker, he reveals his weaknesses, but also seeks affirmation to his value. I felt the second half of the movie was a religious quest. He goes to hell and meets Larry, the guy who stole his 20-something girlfriend. Larry is self-confident, even in hell. Larry also redeems him in real life when he bails out of jail for taking his son to the university on an unscheduled day. The movie has unbelievable quirky scenes like a hooker, a friend with a heart problem, and his son riding to upstate New York to win an award from his college. It seems he has an overdeveloped attachment to his son and a need to prove his worthiness as a father. I feel like Woody Allen is one of those people whose biographical life carries into his films. Mia Farrow's unforgiveness for seducing his stepchild, which actually was Soon-Yi Previn, we're not talking about Dylan right now, is played by the role of Kirstie Alley as an unforgiving wife. His son, Hilly, is probably representative of Woody and Mia's child, Satchel. I feel like Allen is trying to go beyond the Jewish roots and discover eternal life in damnation or heaven. However, as he emphasizes, Jews only believe in blessings being rewarded on earth, not in heaven. Woody Allen, as a screenwriter, is presenting to the audience comedy through self-doubt, but I found this movie more reaching than others. His vehicle of motion in writer's block, but his theme is universal in growing spiritually and finding the meaning of life. Allen uses comic levels of hell and graphic visual depictions of hell, including a meeting with his father. Kaufman uses his speeded images of creation and or evolution. So the thing is that I read an article yesterday, and I did do a show last night on this topic, but I was so overtired I had to erase it and start over. Maureen Orth was a writer for the Vanity Fair, and she gave 10 reasons why she thought Woody Allen was guilty. Now, this show is not an attempt to prove Woody Allen's guilt. I conflicted verbally with a page on Facebook about the approach Dylan Farrow should take over after 19 years have passed by. I think it's been 25 now. 19 years have passed by. Basically, Dylan Farrow was hurt by her stepfather when she was 7 years old. She's now 28. She wrote a piece in the New York Times claiming her father's guilt, and it was around the time that Woody Allen received a Lifetime Achievement Award. The main reason she did this is to shed light that there's a puzzlement on her behalf why the entertainment industry blindly supports Woody Allen without recognizing that his prior actions have caused severe damage to her and her family. I felt like it was a timely way of doing so and bringing to light the situation, but then she targeted actors that have been in his movies and was up for awards. I don't know if that's necessarily fair because Woody Allen's been in the business since the mid-60s, and his actors choose to become involved in his movies based on his directing ability and the material. He can only take responsibility for his own actions, but his failure should not be projected on his actors that choose to involve themselves with his movies. If someone felt strongly about Woody Allen that he was an out-and-out child molester or sexual predator, they would not be cast in one of his roles or refuse at the onset. I would like to explain now how the situation evolved. So I went on a web page. I was invited to a page that I wasn't familiar with. I made a suggestion because in the last 5 years I've seen other comments made by Ronan Farrow and other family members that made me realize that the situation had not been let go of, and that Mia and her two children that live with her, and all of them are grown and out of the house now, they kept making comments about Woody Allen condemning him, and I thought after 21 years that maybe some forgiveness needed to take place. And even Kate Blanchett said that she was sorry for the turmoil it had caused the family after Dylan Farrow brought her up in a tweet, or I think it was in the letter, actually. I was only making a suggestion. I didn't expect barrage of women to attack me on that premise of forgiveness. John Yoder has joined the show, so we'll bump him in right now. Okay, he just dropped the line. Anyways, there was a barrage of forgiveness, and a barrage of women coming after me, claiming to say that I was insensitive, that child molestation does not have the same meaning as sexual assault. Good afternoon, John. You're on the show.
Well, hello, Harry.
Good afternoon, John.
Hello, Hammer. How are you?
I'm sorry to inconvenience you with the bad timing of the show, but I have church tonight, and you have office sales. This is a Good Friday show, and I'm basically recapping my research and background into Woody Allen movies. I had taken a film class at CSU Northridge, and I was trying to inadvertently mention that my comment on forgiveness on that I Support Dylan Farrell page was taken out of proportion, and 151 women eventually responded, including two women who were willing to engage in a discussion on our radio page that had been sexually abused but were willing to discuss it and not hostile. Do you remember that conversation?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's a very sensitive subject. Sometimes in dealing with these issues, what's difficult is that each one of us has our own value system or how we respond to things. So sometimes, I'll give you an example, people can insult me. It doesn't bother me, sometimes not at all even. Other people, you insult them, and they're ready to, you know, take it out of a parking lot or pull out a gun. like showing props, showing respect in certain communities. I mean, it's the ultimate thing. And there's a certain social pecking order where you sit, how you look at someone is so major. So the problem that people may run into, such as me, I'll go into a certain setting and tell a joke or be flip about an issue, or something that maybe I've gotten forgiveness for and I've moved on, whereas we have people that are walking around that have had abuse from 10 years, 20, 30 years ago, and they're carrying it every day, and they haven't found a mechanism to deal with it, or maybe that's the process. I don't know. I shattered my leg, let's see, in 2001-ish, and it's been, 14 years. And even though it's healed and I've moved on and I don't even think about it, my body every day tells me, it reminds me what I did. It's like, you know, it's like some mistakes you pay for once, other mistakes you pay for the rest of your life. And it's I think maybe for some of these people, it's like that. They've tried to heal and move on, forgive, but then this pain hits them and they don't know how to deal with it. Myself, I always just tell people, listen, if you've been abused, and I understand this because I've worked with it, and I've had not so much molestation, but I've had other abuses in my life. If you every day get up and keep going over this issue, you're letting that person rape you again, molest you again, damage you again, assault you again. So I always tell them, why not just leave it at one? You know, like just drop it. Find a way to get the healing and move forward, because every time you go through it, unless you have to learn something from it. Sometimes you have to absorb and learn and you get all the angles. I understand that, but it's when you, 30 years later, every day, you know, you're on Oprah or Jerry Springer going over the same stuff. There's not enough, you know, to me, life is valuable. You know, why not invest?
Well, that's a very good point, and I wanted to share a couple things with you that I learned in the last 4 days. I did apologize to the owners of the page. Apparently, I used improper lingo. The politically correct word is sexual assault. It is no longer child molestation. Secondly, if I ever had to make a public commentary again, I will be careful what page to put it on. That was a page strictly to support Dylan Farrell. It was called I Support Dylan Farrell. And I didn't realize the nature of the page that I was invited to, and I apologize. The other thing I wanted to bring up, which really has no bearing, is that Moses Pharaoh, Mia Pharaoh's child that Woody adopted, has now gone to Woody's side, and he has stated that he believed that his daughter Dylan has never been molested, that he is not, he's been friends with the father again for years, and that Mia Farrow used it as ammunition when he left her, when he took his other adopted daughter, Soon Yi Previn, out of the house. Now, I don't know the family details. I just know there's a lot of pain there and lack of resolution. But there was also a woman named Maureen Orth who wrote a Vanity Fair piece that listed 10 reasons why she thought Woody Allen was guilty, and she had scoured the court documents, the testimony, and the examination by Yale University, who examined. They didn't physically examine the child, but they verbally questioned the child. One time she denied it, another time she admitted it. And the child's 7-year-old testimony was confusing, and that's why they never brought it to court. So basically, the whole story is that I had an opinion. I'm not a famous celebrity. I'm not Sean Hannity, and I'm not Pat Robertson. I had something to say. It caught someone's attention, and then there was a media glare about it. But you're right. In these types of situations, especially concerning sexual abuse, we have to be very careful what we say.
Right, because the other kind of call of the faux pas is that if you put something in writing, like you put it on, you know, anything that's written, goes on blog, Facebook, anything that's, it changes the dynamic. You can say, you know, a certain minority is stupid. And people, you know, among minorities, they'll laugh and go, yeah, that's true, you're darn this, they're darn that, you know, darn rednecks, you know, and blah, blah, blah. It's not an issue. You put that in writing, and it goes on headlines, and suddenly you're a racist, you're evil, you're an idiot, you're all these different things come out of people. It's like if you were just casually sitting in a bar drinking and telling jokes, you know, you'd be a comedian and people would pay to see you. But it doesn't translate the same way. And again, a lot of people, they don't have the mechanism to forgive. So it's kind of like joking around with a dog that's growling and, you know, drool's dripping down its side of its mouth and it's got a bone in there and you're poking at it. It's just a, you know, it's a bone. You know, move on. It's like, no, that there's a territorial issue there, and yet we have to be cognizant that some people, they don't have a way to heal. And then so these are open wounds. So it's like touching someone that's in the cast, you know, or that's in the hospital. Like we're saying, hey, get over it. You know, maybe it was 30 years ago, but that wound is still open. And I guess that's the problem is if you found a mechanism to heal.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, like being callous and blatant on, because I do follow Mia Farrow on Twitter, and she also has her Twitter accounts linked to her Facebook account. Well, in the news this week, there was a big hullabaloo over the religious freedom law that's going to be passed in Indiana, saying that if you do not believe in homosexual marriages or any type of, you know, gay agendas, then you can have the choice not to serve them by your business. Well, Mia Farrow made 4 posts about that particular topic, and she finally got fed up, and she was so angry, she wrote, well, maybe Jesus was gay or even bi. And there was like 164 comments, and of those 164 comments, 4 to 5 people were ardent Christians. They stated that her comment was inappropriate, that they were once big fans of hers, and now they're not, and that she used the wrong language to get her point across. So even celebrities themselves, and in this case someone who's tied to the topic matter I'm talking about today, make poor choices in expressing their views.
Right. And people get all bent out of sort, and for some people that's their dynamic, and that's the way this world functions. And there's certain people I know, if I approach a certain subject, I just have to be real sensitive to. And sometimes we say things in a casual manner, and it's an issue that maybe we don't have an open wound over, but we can discuss. I can discuss most anything. You know, I can talk about my dad's death. I can talk about being cheated on. I can talk about all kinds of stuff. And to me, I'm fine with it. But other people, it may be just a major deal, and they can't find resolution, or they're still in that process. What the thing that I always
but
advise
social
people,
media is not really an intimate format for. Like, I could see, like, a congregation of women who've been sexually abused creating a support group, but something like Facebook, when there's so much room for interference, they shouldn't use that as a primary source for healing.
Yeah, the problem with Facebook is it's like the lobby in a hotel or the outside, the entrance to a restaurant or something like that. You usually walk up there and everyone says, hi, how you doing? Give a hug, take a picture, take a selfie, that kind of stuff. You usually don't walk up in, you know, in public and go, hey, you know, yesterday my dad molested me or whatever. You know, it's not that it's just not the right place for it, because other people are exchanging family pictures or talking about walking the dog. It's they're not necessarily,
yeah.
It's not a serious debate or a counseling site. And also, when you involve yourself with it, the problem is you connect, now your statements connect to people who, you know, your niece, your uncle, your, you know, the 90-year-old woman at church that you say hi to, and we're talking about major, heavy, sensitive
right, like,
issues.
So if I had, like, an interesting Plenty of Fish date last night, I might not want to post it because three of my friends on Facebook are pastors.
And
you know, like,
and the other thing, too, is the comment that you say, you know, may get smeared into a different perspective. Like, example, I don't do drugs, and, you know, I just never have. But I have friends, and they're even Christians, who smoke pot. And they don't do it every day, you know, but they might every, you know, 3 or 4 months they'll smoke pot. And that's their personal thing. Others, they smoke cigarettes. Some of them, they drink alcohol, and there's no scripture specifically against that. But the point is, you probably don't want to put that on your Facebook, especially when an employer is looking at it, you know, finding out that you had a bender this weekend with your friends in Vegas, even though that's maybe your boss would do that too. But he's not going to put that in that site where that information goes to people that are disconnected from your situation.
That's true. Also, like, don't put that you're a member of the Communist Party if you're applying for a stock market job. Today, Mira, I want to change the topic, and you probably I wasn't going to do a long show today, by the way. How much time do you have left?
I'm on a very tight schedule, and I have to actually go into work earlier, but I'm just going with the flow. I actually just called to listen, to tell you the truth, but I'm involved in it, and that's cool. So just whatever.
Well, we have 12 more minutes, and I want to cover two more brief topics.
Go for it.
I just wanted to mention before we go to the next topic, Mia Farrow wrote today that as a Christian committed to faith and equality, I am disgusted by Mike Huckabee's statement that they won't stop until there are no more Christians. I think he was referring to the religious bill, and I think people have been really vehemently protesting in Indiana to the point where that pizzeria who rejected the gay couple has lost a lot of business, and now they got 240,000 donations. They actually got more donations than revenue. So they're not going to be hurting that pizzeria. So, and I will be writing an article about that next week in the Reader, because I'm going to write about how Christians don't really want, if they are not for same-sex marriage, they feel reluctant to share it in the community. And I'm also going to be interviewing a gay person from West Hollywood who's a member of my church who is now straight because he believes he'll go to hell if he didn't go back to being straight. And there was another topic I wanted to bring up too, but I'll wait a few minutes. What do you think about that?
Well, what's going to happen in the future is that with technology and science creating new moral dilemmas, like, you know, 1,000 years ago, probably abortion wasn't a really hot-button subject. You know, maybe it was, but I don't think it was. Transgender operations weren't. Science or keeping someone on life support when they're brain dead. These are things that, you know, for centuries people didn't have to wrestle with it. Now we have moral dilemmas over it and people trying to split hairs. So I think you'll see more of this. The problem I see with it is that people are taking a moral stand, not based on their own personal, but based on what they feel is a higher directive from God or the Bible or whatever. And so they're trying to be respectful to their faith. And other people are just trashing on them like they're stupid, they're ignorant, they're you know, whatever, they're mean, they're evil. And it's like, is generalizing, and it's not keeping in perspective. Everyone has their own, you know, ideas, their own preferences, and we have to respect them. And sometimes there's a validity to each point. So I see if someone wants to be transgender, that's fine. But don't
gay and buy a wedding cake in a Indiana bakery? They don't have to change sexes to buy a cake.
That's true. I mean, each situation has its own little bag of Pandora's box, I guess you would call it. The thing is, I remember at the McDonald's, there was a sign, this is like just a couple weeks ago, and a customer came in, and the person running the counter said, "Sir, you need to leave, you know, unless you apologize." I guess they had a beef going on for a couple of days. What happened basically is the guy who was walking in was a student who felt he was a prophet. So he would start talking about God openly and talking about the end of the world and the people need to, you know, change their lives. And the counter person was just saying, "This is a restaurant. It's, you know, just respect people being here. You know, this isn't a free speech area, you know, First Amendment thing. This is a, you know, a place of business." And the guy wanted to order a Big Mac or something. And he said, "Look at the sign." And it says, "You know, we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone." And he said, "Now, if you want to go outside, we'll discuss this. You know, you want to apologize." And anyway, so for 15 minutes, they went back and forth. And he said, "You know, do you want me to call the police?" And the point is, the guy who had entered to order was basically wanting to demand that he have, you know, total preferential treatment. And the person in the McDonald's was basically saying, "I have the right to refuse service to you. I don't have to. I'm not forced by law to." And, you know, like, are you going to, you know, is that what we're going to do?
The restaurant has the discretion.
Right.
Like if someone came in there smelly and they were a public nuisance.
Right. So it's kind of, you know, it's a two-edged sword because you can say, okay, I'm black and you're discriminating, you know, because, you know, with the color of my skin, or I do something you disagree with. But then there's the other angle. Well, someone comes in who's a child molester, and you go, and we don't want to serve them. Are we forced to? It's a slippery slope. I see where the business was basically taking some kind of moral stand. I think, though, the only problem when you do that, it's like, well, what about refusing service to the guy who's committing adultery on his wife? What about the guy refusing service to someone who steals? Are we going to screen everyone's personal life? You know, I work for people. Who knows what my boss does? Who knows what my previous boss before them do? Do they sacrifice virgins at midnight? You know, I have no idea. I'm not following them 24/7. So
that was my exact thought line. Like, let's say four people walk into an Indiana bakery. One's a prostitute, one's a drunk, one's homosexual, and one is an adulterer. Some Christians, and the reason I say some, because some Christians accept, some Christians think homosexuality is sin. A majority probably do, but they don't feel compelled to judge that person in public, and they're not in charge of that person's salvation. Well, there's a lot of people who have drinking problems, but we don't necessarily go up to their face and try to counsel them. So that was my thought line like yours, that we cannot stand there and put people in the judgment seat, especially in ordinary situations.
Well, kind of, that's a great point, and what it serves to is this, is that we all have a right to our own personal, you know, values and our morality. And so I, as a Christian, example, I feel that you know, homosexuality is not a God lifestyle. Now, that being said, people have the right to do anything they want to do. Anything you want to do. The question is, when someone comes to me and says, we want you to pass this or that law for your society of how you want it to run, and you have to think a certain way or you're a bad person. And my thought line is, well, I'm trying to promote a moral, you know, society where we have certain values, family values, where we're not, you know, pushing pornography, we're not doing a lot of wild, crazy stuff. If you want to do that in your own personal life, that's fine. But if you want me to pass a law for everyone to follow, I'm not going to roll with it. And don't think I'm an evil person just, you know, because I am. But I think that's the problem. It's not so much when people having their own personal view. It's when you come to me and try to force what you believe. And just like me saying you have to be a Christian, or everyone has to believe in, you know, Jesus or a certain faith to be a part of our society. It's like, no, you don't have to. So don't legislate to me that, you know, that we need to have a gay family system recognized by the courts and supported and endorsed by government. It doesn't mean you can't practice it. I'm just saying don't force me to have to vote yes or no on it.
And that's a big issue, and we can maybe tackle it on another show, because on the other hand, if that type of religious freedom bill didn't exist, then if someone just refused service, the person would just be offended and might sue. But it just opens up such a big can of worms. And the last brief subject, I'm going to close the show in less than 5 minutes, is that about 6 years ago, a gay friend of mine asked me to watch a movie called Zeitgeist, which was his idea. It was some kind of documentary, independent film. It was on Good Friday 6 years ago. And he wanted me to watch it because he said it was proof that Jesus Christ was not the Son of God. He wasn't a prophet. It was a farce. And I think the movie had something to do with how there were many prophets in that day and they all claimed the same thing. Well, basically, I told him I'm not going to watch it. It's Good Friday. I was headed out to Riverside County. I didn't have time. And I had been online with a childhood friend who had lived in Canada, and basically I told him I couldn't do it. And basically he has become now famous. He's a Helen Hunt's hairdresser. He makes a lot of money. He was in my play, and he basically told me that he couldn't be my friend if I didn't watch it right then and there. And that's where
it
ended.
Could you get it on Netflix later and patch it up?
Yeah, I told him. I didn't say I'd watch it later. I just said it's Good Friday, and I'm not going to watch it today on a holy day. I guess I could have appeased him by saying, yes, I'll catch it later on Netflix. But I didn't tell him that, and apparently he thought that I wasn't listening to him. So I just want to address that around the world there's a lot of people who have pending apologies, but they can't issue them, as John knows, because sometimes things go wrong in friendships, and the buck stops there. And you can't.
I've heard of such things, but
with an unknown person who we can't mention. So basically, you know, sometimes people like me are foolish and keep trying, but in the end, I don't try just to beat myself against the wall. I try because I want to seek resolution. But maybe that's dumb, and we all have to watch our mouths and our minds and respect the other person.
Well, you know, resolution is always a good thing, and resolution comes by hearing the other person and respecting them and or trying, you know, as best as you can, holding on to your values and respecting yourself. I had one time I worked at this place, and there was a salesman, and it's kind of like this. I was customer service, so we're like a buffer for like five different things. We got the customer, you know, who we have to take the assumption that the customer is always right. But then you got the management, and they're telling you this is what we have to do, and they pay the bills, and it's like, okay, they sign the checks. But then you've got, like, the salespeople, and they're making deals left and right, so we're trying to be the concierge, we're trying to be the, you know, the ambassador of goodwill. Like, oh, well, I know your salesman said this, but here's what the manufacturer said, and this is what my boss is going to do. And you just try to smooth things over. And so, and then you got the warehouse and the delivery guys and the warehouse managers, and these are the guys out there really working with the customers and meeting them, and so they have issues and you know, arguments and things going on, and so we have to smooth that over. And the point is, we had no one else to go to. We just, everyone's shooting at us, and we don't have the authority to just punch someone out because we're customer service. Well, the salesperson basically had some kind of issue. It was a small issue. But it was something that if he went to management, it was going to blow up and it was going to affect other people. He said, what should I do? And I said, just keep your mouth shut. I'll take care of it. And, you know, I know the office manager will take care of it. Don't go up to upper management. Don't mention this. Just pretend it never happened. Guess what happens 30 seconds later? He calls the owner.
Management.
He calls the owner and goes, I was just wondering what we're going to do about blah, 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 blah. And, you know, 1 minute later, I'm hearing the phone calls go throughout the intercom, like, you know, Matt, you know, what do you know about blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, it goes in the whole circle. You just, down the line, everyone's getting interrogated and roasted, except for me, because I was out of the loop. And then the person calls back later. And I said, why did you do that? I told you what was going to happen. I told you the consequence of what was going to happen. Oh, no, I just had to do it. It's like, yes, but I told you in advance. I'm not stupid. I'm not, you know, I'm a part of the team here. I'm trying to help you. Help me help you,
you
help me.
You perceived in advance what the consequences would be.
And then the person steps on the landmine anyway. I go, that's a landmine. Don't run through there. Right? Juggling firecrackers. It's like, just let it go. And so what does the person do? They run through there, you know, just throwing lighting matches and you know, running with scissors in the office. It's like, okay. So from that point on, the consequence of what happens isn't with, you know, the third party. It's with the person you've given the advice to, because they've been advised of what was wise, and they
do
it anyway.
Well, hopefully they didn't blame you for it. They realized their own mistake.
Well, I've heard that somehow in some situations, I get re-involved in a situation that I've pulled away from, and yet people proceed. Example,
like today when I made my little mistake or big mistake.
You might lead into that. I had a friend once that they would call, because I used to help them, like, with their customer service problems. Like, oh, you need to return this thing that didn't work, and, you know, you've called 3 times and no one's responded. Here, let me help you. And so it got to a point where this person would call whatever the rep of whatever the situation is, and they would chew someone out. They'd, you know, you need to get this handled and within 24 hours, and who's your supervisor, and this is the worst company I've ever dealt with, blah, blah, blah. And then they go, you know, and my name's John Yoder, and here's my contact information. And I had to confront him. It's like, don't use my name. Don't involve me for your conflict. Because then I have someone out there running around with a dartboard with my face on it. I don't even know it. You know, and then the next time I talk to them, they're blowing up on me. I have no idea why. It's like, own your own crap. It's like, that's your thing. Fine, mud wrestle with it. But, you know, don't mud wrestle other people and throw them into your pit of confusion and chaos. So
I'm really sorry. And I want to end the show by saying, based on our last 3 weeks of conversations, I made amends with another person that we both used to know, but it wasn't you know who, it was someone else.
I see. Well, I asked for forgiveness.
That's all I did. But
I think in our conversations, there's people out there that might feel offended, and I don't know who they are. I have Alzheimer's. I just have a very hard time remembering such. I don't recall.
It wasn't the Alzheimer's person. It was somebody else.
But the point is, I think I've made the point that I don't know about any of these things, because if I didn't talk about it, it never happened. And there's a certain code to such things. When you talk to someone and you go and they say, "We never had this conversation," you go, "Yeah, we never had this conversation. So it never existed." But then if the person comes back and says, "Oh, by the way, remember the blah, blah, blah," well, you're not playing the game right.
I do have editing powers on the radio show, but just so you know, this was someone I knew from 2001 to 2002. So I'll just keep that in mind. It was someone in my prior life. Now,
yes.
What are your final thoughts as I have to go get Lauren to drive him to McDonald's?
My final thought would be today is Good Friday, and it's for some people it's just another day, but for many people across the world, probably a fourth of the world or whatever, a couple billion people, it's the saddest yet gladdest day, really. As Larry Norman would say about Jesus, I guess my favorite part is when you died. It's like he died for our sins. So sad for Jesus, but glad for us, and even better that he rose from the dead, conquered death, and that's the hope of faith. So in that spirit of forgiveness, whatever past offenses, I pray that we all find a way to just let them go and let the Lord wash it away, and we forgive and move on. I think that's the answer to world peace. I don't see any other resolution. And until then, we're just all going to fight each other to the grave in anger till we learn how to forgive. So follow
my
the
final
truth.
Thank you. That was kind and sweet and powerful. My final thought is Al-Shabaab and ISIS can kill as many people as they want, but they can't kill what took place on Calvary over 2,000 years ago. And the power of Christ will live beyond death. And I'm sorry for the 147 Kenyan Christians that were killed on a college campus yesterday. And I hope that the Al-Shabaab people doing this kind of killings and others will realize that these are human lives and they matter, and that there's no way to express your religion that way. And with that, I am sorry for the Pharaoh family that they never found resolution, and hopefully Sunday they will. Sunday,
yes.
Not Sunday.
Yeah.
So
Sunday
we're probably
nice.
Not having a show Saturday, and I don't know about Sunday yet, but happy Easter, John.
Happy Easter to you, Jane. May your hammer hit lightly on the weekend.
My hammer will stay out of swinging directions.
Yes.
God bless you, and thank you for joining us, and have fun tonight. Goodbye.
You too. And go forward in Godspeed, and everyone just learn to live and forgive. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night.